We're continuing our summer series, Food for Thought, when we talk to our favourite Irish people about their love for food. They're going to tell us their favourite recipes, what they like to eat and drink, and what memories food brings them. And today I'm delighted to be joined by Sophie White, author, journalist, podcaster and former chef.
Yeah.
Which people might not know.
No, yeah, ancient history. No. I'm very young.
How did that happen?
How did that happen? I was, I finished college and I had done a degree in sculpture in NCAD and I loved art, but I didn't really know what to be doing with that. And I really wanted to travel. And so I kind of started, you know, traveling a bit, and I got to New Zealand actually and needed to work and make some more money for the next leg and, you know, that kind of thing. And I just kind of fell into chefing. I'd worked in restaurants when I was in college and I always loved like hospitality, such good crack, like the best job ever. And I was interested in eating and then became interested in food while I was, yeah.
See, most of us who work in restaurants or bars were on the waitressing side. It's harder to work your way into the kitchen.
Yeah. You have to kind of, you have to survive a kind of hazing. You have to be okay with that. You have to be okay with being like roundly mocked. I remember really early doors, I was in a kitchen and, you know, like you go in and you like your first job is like, you know, just to kind of weather insults and mocking and wash like
cleaning
bin
everything.
Liners full of spinach and, you know, chop, you know, huge bags of onions. You just do the dog's body work. And I was there chopping onions and this guy, one of the chefs, told me that if you hold a spoon in your mouth, it stops the onions stinging your eyes. So I was there like, whoa, spoon in mouth, chop, chop, chop. And then, I mean, about 25 minutes later, it dawned on me that I was being made a fool of.
But if you don't cut the root off the onion, you know, the like the hairy bit at the end where mm-hmm. the root's attached to the plant, that is supposed to work. I don't know if that works.
Some people I know wash onions.
Or pour cold water on your wrists, on the inside of your wrists.
I bet you there'll be loads of texts about this now. Everyone will have an idea. Like as well, and I keep the root on to keep the onion together while if I'm doing a dicing, like, but each to their own.
Yeah, well, apparently that helps with the tears as well. So can we take from all of that you are a foodie because you were interested? That's what led you down that path in food.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And I still love cooking. And I mean, I chefed through my 20s and I didn't leave the kitchen really. I chefed all the way through my first pregnancy and I was like out to here with a baby in the kitchen at BB's Cafe off South Circular Road. Actually, was the last kitchen I worked in and I loved it there. And I used to be like, I think chefing makes you really sturdy. Like you just are ready for the rest of life if you can work in a kitchen.
Tough.
I mean, I'd say I'd put it up there with nursing. People might resent that comparison, but I do think they're two extremely physical jobs, require a lot of stamina.
Absolutely. And you're on your feet, of course, for your entire shift as well, aren't
you? Obviously, one job people might think is more important than the other. But yeah, you're on your feet for the whole shift. And I used to be like hauling the bins out at the end of shift and like you'd get up in the bins and jump up and down on top of them to help squish them down so you get more bins.
Lovely.
In. And I could just see people just looking at this like girl with a huge belly just like jumping around in the bins. But like, it helps. Keeps you from being too precious.
And now that you have three children, can you still make the fancy things that perhaps you would have made before or wanted to make before?
I just exclude my children. Like entirely.
Then you have to make two dinners. I have this problem as well. I like to cook, but my children like plain food. So I end up making plain food for everybody.
Oh no, I would never sacrifice myself.
Oh, so you load in the chilies and all of the flavours for yourself.
I'll do all of the things. No, like someone was asking me, because they hear about that I used to cook and stuff and they'd be like, oh my, do you love cooking for your children? And I'm like, I do. I love just like easing the film off the pizza with such care.
Sliding
it into the oven. It just gives me such pleasure. No, my kids eat absolutely nothing. So like genuinely, I kind of think as well, my policy is to like rather than push it or make meals become like an annoying stressful time, I just get on with what I want to eat. I'm always offering them and I just give them their sad beige plates and maybe one day one day.
Yeah, I think that as well. I mean, we all didn't eat fancy things when we were small, but you get to like different flavours as you grow up and you're more willing to experiment. So just give them the pancakes.
Crisps. My first child's first word was crisps. And we were like, shh, we like, you're really, really letting the side down. Stop saying crisps.
Do you stress over that, though, that they're not eating the variety of foods that you eat? Does it bother you at all?
No, like each have, each of them has like a couple of things. Like my middle one loves cucumber. So like I say I'm just averaging about a cucumber a day with him. And like the other ones eat, like they'll have smoothies and stuff. I don't know. Like I remember going to the dentist and telling my hygienist about like, you know, it's hard to get the kids to eat, but like at least they'll have smoothies and stuff. And the hygienist was like, oh yes, but I mean, you mustn't let them have smoothies too far after they've brushed their teeth. Smoothies are terrible for their teeth. And I was like, I cannot.
No, you can't. This is exhausting. You can't win. You feel like you can't win, you know?
Yeah.
And pancakes with a little bit of honey and some fruit, that's fine.
I know.
You know, I gave that to my children for dinner one day last week. I just gave up. I'd suggested all of these things and they were like, no, no, no. And I thought, you know what? You can have pancakes.
Yeah.
It's fine.
I mean, some would say pancakes are more effort. So I commend you. I find the thing that annoys me most is if they're complaining while holding a bowl of something that I would have killed to have when I was a kid. Like mine love cereal and they have like these cereal buffets in the morning and they'll have like a mixture of like Cocoa Pops and Special K and blah, blah, blah. And then they'll be like whinging at the table, like crying into their Cocoa Pops about something. And I'll be like, honestly, if I had never seen a Cocoa Pop before I was 18 years old.
I know, we were never allowed them. I tried to keep those sort of treat cereals for holidays.
Yeah, that's a good policy.
It worked for a while, but as they get older, they're beginning to find ways around that.
See, my house growing up, there was nary a Cocoa Pop.
No.
Or a Nutella.
No.
Or like, I mean, we would have potentially a rich tea biscuit, and it's turned me into such a sugar maniac that I just think you must have some kind of set of balance, kind of happy medium, because you're going to cultivate neurosis.
Do you feel guilty then when you allow the chocolate spreads in and the treat things? You don't feel guilty about that?
No. I feel like I've been reading more and more and more over the last few years about kind of, you know, moralizing about food and like, you know, the kind of, I don't know, self-flagellation about having a piece of cake or whatever. And, you know, and I've really tried to work on my own relationship with food. So I have really, you know,
trying
to divorce the kind of moralizing from the food.
It's probably not a bad strategy, but we are so conditioned to think very carefully about what we're allowing our children to eat that can be difficult, you know?
Yeah. I feel a bit like, I kind of feel like rebelling a bit too, because I don't know, it's just so hard to manage all of the things that we're supposed to be doing absolutely perfectly for the kids. So they can have the Nutella.
Just getting through, right?
Getting through, exactly.
You wrote about food, didn't you, in your book in 2016?
Yes, yeah.
Recipes for a Nervous Breakdown.
Yeah, that was my first book, and it was a kind of memoir cookbook, actually. And so it was a book about a breakdown and kind of like threaded through the chapters and the stories in the book were recipes, all from kind of my years in the kitchens and... I used to write a cooking column for the Sunday Independent called The Domestic, which is kind of, it's funny because after college, I had no idea what to do with art. And I felt like a real failure after college. I feel like that's something more people experience than I realized at the time, that you get out of college and you just kind of like, it's like your flop era. You like have no idea what to do with this degree you've just got. If you've been, you know, fortunate enough to get a degree and you just don't know how to do life yet. Mm-hmm. And so when I was at such a loss after college, I had a breakdown then, and it was quite serious breakdown. I had like kind of drug induced psychosis.
Yes.
And it was very traumatic. And, you know, through medication and psychiatric care, like I did come back to myself, but it took quite a long time. Like I would say the real acute part of the breakdown was about like maybe 3 to 6 months, and then kind of in the years after, I could still feel the reverberations of it. You know, it was a long time getting back from it, and it was in those years that I came to cooking. And I just found chefing was an amazing just reprieve from the kind of, I don't know, relentlessness of my own head.
Well, it's also a way of self-expression, isn't it?
Exactly. It's creative. It never felt like it was totally divorced from my old life in art college, but it was just a different way and more practical. You know, I knew I was going to get paid for this and, you know, that kind of thing. And then it was actually through cooking that I got a chance to write through this food column. So I developed recipes for the column and I had a little preamble, you know, spiel at the beginning. And I think just gradually, as time went on, my spiel started to like totally dwarf the recipes. And, you know, I just loved writing about my life mainly. Like, you know, my husband was a chef as well at the time. So it was often about two chefs fighting over food.
Well, Nora Ephron used that device, didn't she, when she was writing about the breakup of her marriage?
Well, of course, in Heartburn.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's loads of food in Heartburn. Yeah, it's and she has recipes in that novel.
Strictly wasn't about her marriage breakup.
Of course not. Wink, wink.
but again, it's a really nice way in, isn't it? Using a recipe into a story
or
a piece.
It's really universal because we all have appetites and we all, like food is just so, like, you know, it can be so comforting, like, and it's so evocative of different times in our lives. Like even Dolly Alderton, the English writer, had recipes in her first book, Everything I Know About Love.
Yes.
Sorry.
Now on the screen, isn't it? It's a BBC series.
Of course. Yeah. Of course, yes. It's just been turned into a TV show and I hear it's amazing. I have to get on that. But yeah, in her book, she had recipes for like pasta and perfect scrambled eggs. Although I remember disagreeing with her perfect scrambled eggs. Scrambled eggs are politically charged food.
And I would go so far as to say poached eggs are also politically charged.
Yeah,
like
yeah.
I have one of those little, you know, those things that you crack the egg into and then you lower it into the saucepan.
Yeah.
Works brilliantly.
Yeah.
They taste really nice if you leave them in for the right amount of time. But trying to clean that little thing.
Oh, yeah.
Just, it takes the joy out of it. I've eaten the eggs and now I have to spend 15 minutes with a pot scrub on this little device to get all the bits of egg.
I thought you were going to say that you received judgment for using the device in the first place.
Not really, because I'm the one cooking.
I think if I hear about somebody and they're talking about scrambled eggs and they talk about maybe putting milk in their scrambled eggs, they're dead to me.
Okay.
I can't deal with that person. What's wrong with you?
So it's butter
and
for
eggs.
You and eggs and salt?
Salt, yeah.
What, microwave or no?
Claire, I cannot.
Yeah, but
low and slow, guys, low and slow.
But again, if you do it in a saucepan, you're going to be cleaning that saucepan for the rest of your morning.
Non-stick. No.
I just don't think non-stick works when it comes to scrambled eggs. I think you're there for, and you take it out. If you don't do it properly, you take it out the next time you want to use it and you go, there's that bit of egg that I didn't clean
up. Oh my God, no. I've got a good pan.
Okay, so it's the quality of my pans now.
I think it might be the pan.
But never a microwave.
I'm not even responding to that.
So you mentioned comfort food there.
But I'm not a snob. I need to point out. I'm wondering.
And this next question will test that theory about your snobbiness or not.
Okay.
Comfort food.
Mm.
Mashed potato. Best comfort food ever.
Oh, I love it. Yeah, I love mashed potato. I love potatoes so much. That, like, I don't even need to go through the rigmarole of the whole peeling, mashing stuff. Like, I was eating Queen's potatoes from Wexford last week, just scrubbed them, boiled them in their skins, in a bowl, loads of butter,
yeah,
salt and pepper, and chopped mint and parsley if it's around, but no stress if it's not.
Mm.
I love mint and parsley on potatoes, new potatoes.
You kind of need nothing else, really.
I mean, nothing else. And like, my devotion to butter, like, I know you're like, oh, a nice knob of butter on top of those potatoes. No. I want an amount of butter that the people in my presence are worried for me. That's the amount of butter I take. Whenever I'm in the deli ordering, you know, a roll and I'm like, they're like butter or mayo and I'm like, butter. And then I'm like, more than you think.
Okay. So you want to see the teeth marks.
Exactly. Exactly. Yes. I want the bread is just the vehicle for the butter.
So are you happy then if I say potatoes and comfort food, that works for you?
Yes,
yeah.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Why do you think, what's another
Well, I'm just wondering,
food?
I'm
like
just wondering if
noodles.
Pasta might be something that would you put in the comfort food column?
I don't know. Like, obviously it's a staple. I eat pasta a lot because I got into making my own pasta during pandemic. Everyone drifted off down their own kind of sourdough mad cul-de-sacs of food, and pasta was my one. And it's actually so easy to make.
No, that's too hard. You've got three children. You can't spend time making your own pasta. Buy a bag of
it. Wait a minute. I have three children. I need to hide from them. Yeah. By spending a lot of time, I'm coming across so mean. I would never waste my homemade pasta on them. They have yet to taste it, Claire. The homemade pasta is for me, maybe my husband if he's around. And it's so good. Like, honestly.
Here, children, here's your frozen pizza while we have the homemade pasta that I've spent hours hiding from you making in the kitchen. I love it.
Exactly.
Sophie, we've got to leave it there, but it was so nice to talk to you as always. That's Sophie White and Food for Thought. Let's take a break.